Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Get this. Approximately 80% of children with cancer survive 5 years or more after the diagnosis of cancer, and that's in high-income countries. However, survival rates are as low as 10% in low-income countries. Childhood cancer is cancer that afflicts children before the age of 18. There are over a dozen types of childhood cancers and several subtypes. A child is diagnosed with cancer every 2 minutes, and over 300,000 children develop the disease worldwide each year. Lack of diagnosis, poor care, and a deficit in specialized medical training for doctors are some of the factors that are affecting survival for children with cancer in Africa. Today, we will look at childhood cancer and how it's being addressed in the United States, Africa, and around the world, really. Joining us via phone from Kampala, Uganda, is Dr. Joseph Lubega, pediatric oncology hematology researcher. Dr. Lubega, welcome to the program. Hello, Dr. Lubega?
Yes, hello, I'm here.
Okay, great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also joining us via phone from Los Angeles, California, is Kathleen Rudy, CEO of the St. Beltrix Foundation. Ms. Rudy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have the both of you. Listen, childhood cancer is a topic that, for me, at least as a health reporter, I feel like it's not talked about very often as much as it should. And Dr. Lubega, do you sense that as a medical, someone in the medical field, do you feel like it is one of the reasons is because a lot of people are not aware of this type of cancer unless their child is affected?
Precisely. I think when you look at the burden of cancer and where cancer and which kind of group of people affected by cancer, by far there are more cases of cancer in adults than to children. Mm-hmm. And I think, in general, what most people know about cancer is derived from experience of adults until, in many cases, a family or relative, a child in a family is affected. And that's how most people get to know that, one, children do get cancers, and the types of cancers they get and the experience of children going through cancer treatment.
And Mrs. Rudy, do you have the same appreciation in terms of why people do not speak so much about childhood cancer when it comes to awareness campaigns and funding and everything that revolves around cancer care for children?
Well, I think it depends a lot based upon what type of country you're in. High-income countries where there are some more resources have more awareness campaigns, and there are more philanthropic endeavors, and often there's government investment in the problem as well. But I think in high-income countries, the public believes that this problem is well in hand. Oh, because the idea of a child being sick with cancer is so offensive to us that we imagine that the resources, of course, have been aligned to address the problem adequately, and that's unfortunately not the case. But then, of course, the situation becomes even more dire in less affluent countries where there aren't the resources, and so the problem only gets magnified, and where there might be more medical needs and more diseases and communicable diseases might be more prevalent, they tend to get more of the immediate attention and the scarce resources that are available. So, yes, I think I agree with everything Dr. Lubega said, and but I think the reality of public perception varies a little bit based upon where you are and the other conditions that exist.
Makes sense indeed. And now, looking at the scope of childhood cancer, I touched a little bit on in my introduction, but Dr. Lubega, could you give us a sense of the scope in sub-Saharan Africa in general?
So similar to many. First of all, our experience getting into the world of cancer in pediatric cancer in Africa was derived from a Baylor College of Medicine involvement with treating children with HIV infection, where we showed that actually, if you have comprehensive research, education, care programs, you can make a and similar to HIV, when you look at the burden of cancer in children, it's actually highest in developing countries. Actually, some studies show that children, the highest incidence of childhood cancer is seen in East Africa, like Uganda. Now, most common cancers are quite similar to what you see in the U.S. and Europe. There is a bit of a bias where children who have dramatic presentation of cancer, like facial tumors, tend to be more easily recognized. Mm-hmm. But our experience at Baylor College of Medicine, where we've developed comprehensive care in particular countries like in Uganda and Botswana, what you start seeing is more of the less dramatic presentation of cancers like leukemia, like brain tumors. They start to show up, and over time we're seeing that, you know, the scope and the types of cancer you see in Africa are quite similar to what you see in Europe and the U.S.
So, Mrs. Rudy, what can you tell us in terms of the common types of childhood cancer in the United States in high income countries?
Well, what's been fascinating to me that I've learned is the genetic background of people in the country and the ethnicities tend to see different types of incidences of childhood cancer. But I believe it's true across the world that leukemias are the most common form of childhood cancer. In high-income countries, brain and spinal cord tumors tend to be the next most common. Neuroblastoma is fairly common, Wilms tumor, lymphomas. But it varies a little bit based upon geography and ethnic background and so forth. But just to add to something Dr. LaVega said, so where more children are lost to cancer in high-income countries than many other diseases combined, it's also the number one non-communicable disease in every country in the world in children.
Wow, that's incredible. And when we look at, let's talk semantic for a second, and something that I found interesting, maybe it's not the right word, but when I went to the St. Beltrix Foundation website, it says that the foundation often refers to kids with cancer instead of childhood cancer. Why is it so?
Well, in the U.S., that word is used very frequently. It's not true in every country, but, you know, when childhood cancers, there are over 100 of them, really, when you consider all the subtypes and so forth. And these affect infants, small children, adolescents, teens, and young adults. So in the U.S. vernacular, the word kid may apply to a college student, but you wouldn't call a college student a child. If you did, they may not appreciate it.
Yes.
Because they might think you're, trying to treat them more like a juvenile. And so we use that term to try and convey to people that this is a much wider age group than is commonly understood that are actually getting what are technically pediatric cancers, because many parts of brain and other functions in the body are still developing up into your early 20s. And so these cancers behave very differently in children, and they are different cancers largely than adult cancers. But they also behave differently, and when given to the treatments given to people whose bodies and minds are still developing, they can have very devastating long-term effects on the life and the quality of life mm-hmm. of that patient.
And that definitely, we'll talk about long-term effect. That was one of my points to touch on. So when we look at the age range, then what is the age range when we refer to childhood cancer, kids cancer?
It's typically birth to age 21, but some countries, Dr. LaVega might know better than I, some countries may look at it a little differently.
Okay, and Dr. LaVega, how is it looked at in your part of the world?
Yes, actually, this is a big problem in Africa, because I think children become emancipated early on, and one of the biggest challenges we have is many people classify children up to the age of 15. Then you have very young people, you know, the late teenagers, and, you know, the group that Ms. Rudy referred to, the, you know, 18 to 21 age. admitted to adult wards, and often, you know, in our experience, they have, you know, lots of studies from the US and Europe have shown that, you know, teenagers, adolescents, and young adults do much better when treated as children, you know, by childhood cancer specialists than by adults. So it's one of the things we're planning to change over time in the African setting, to recognize that adults probably would do better, you know, when treated by pediatricians.
So they do better for what reason? Is it the type of treatment they'll receive, or the whole approach of the scope of the treatment?
I think it's the broader holistic care that are probably more geared towards children, more support. But also there are some differences in treatment protocols that are used in children different from those used in adults.
Okay. So to what extent are children cancer different from adult cancer? Miss Rudy, could you comment on that?
Well, certainly many of the diseases are different. We often think of cancers by the location that they occur in the body. Mm-hmm. And so while both adults and children get blood cancers or brain tumors, the majority of other cancers are very different. You don't typically hear of children getting lung cancer, and it's very rare for a child to have breast cancer and so forth. So you can see that the places they occur are different, so therefore you would need different treatments. But also, because the child is still developing, the way their body responds to treatment is different. In many ways, I understand, I'm not a doctor, so I need to give you that caveat, but I understand that their bodies are more resilient in many respects. Mm-hmm. But the treatment, the toxicity of these chemicals that they get in chemotherapy and the harshness of the radiation and so forth can impair them for the rest of their life, if not only in the short term. And some of these late effects that we're talking about are things like cognitive impairments, heart disease, second and third cancers, infertility, stunted growth, in addition to things that are more visually obvious like loss of vision or hearing or loss of limbs, organs, and so forth. So there are so many scars, if you will, mm-hmm. that can stay with the childhood patient. Now, it is possible that many adults would experience similar things if they also lived for decades past their cancer treatment, but the average age of a cancer diagnosis in a high-income country amongst adults is 67. The average age of a childhood diagnosis is 6. So at 67, if you don't have an onset of more problems caused by your treatment for 20 years, you may not live that long for another reason, or you may not, that may look pretty good to you, like you've got another 20 years at life. But as a child, if you get that, that doesn't look like success in your treatment. Mm-hmm. So we have a long way to go in terms of improving the quality of the research, and that's why we believe at the St. Baldrick's Foundation so much in not just helping support research here in the U.S. where we're based, but extending our program throughout the world and helping to make opportunities for brilliant researchers like Dr. Lubega possible, because he has this wonderful vision and all the talents and ability. He just needs a little resource help to be able to implement that and create so much more promise and opportunity and capacity to treat children better at home in Uganda and elsewhere.
This is a great segue, because I was going to actually talk about one of the programs, projects that the foundation is involved with, which is working with Dr. Lubega to train doctors in Uganda. And help really with knowledge and expertise, so that the children with cancer will have a better care and the better expertise that is lacking now. And we're going to do so right after the break. We have to take a short break for the news. And when we come back, Dr. Lupeka and Ms. Rudy, we'll talk about the foundation, the St. Baldrick's Foundation, and the project that Dr. Lubega, you are heading. So we'll be right back. Don't go away. It's now time for the news with Monique.
Thanks, Lenord, and good evening. Tuberculosis has become increasingly resistant to antibiotics, but scientists have discovered a bacterium naturally found in soil that could fight against the disease. Investigators from the United States, England, and Australia have hit upon a species of bacteria in a large family called Streptomyces found in soil. Because this new medicine derives from nature, scientists are challenged to discover ways of growing the bacteria artificially. In the laboratory, they've extracted compounds from Streptomyces that target a specific enzyme called MRAY in Mycobacterium, that pathogen that causes tuberculosis. The compounds effectively kill Mycobacterium, and while the team is looking for ways to do that, they're beginning to find the right tools. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says environmental pollution kills more than 1 in 4 children under the age of 5 every year. The HWO examines the impact of harmful environments on children's health and offers solutions in 2 new studies: Inheriting a Sustainable World, Atlas on Children's Health and the Environment, and a companion report, Don't Pollute My Future, The Impact of the Environment on Children's Health. The authors agree that air pollution is the biggest killer and is responsible for 6.5 million premature deaths every year. The HWO says the most common causes of death among children aged 1 month to 5 years are diarrhea, malaria, and pneumonia. Corrective actions include providing safe water and sanitation, limiting exposure to hazardous chemicals, and improving waste management. Finally, the World Health Organization warns that common illnesses like the flu will become incurable unless antibiotics are developed quickly. The HWO says new antibiotics are urgently needed against bacteria that pose the greatest threat to human health. The more an antibiotic is used, the less effective it becomes. And as common diseases become less responsive to today's antibiotics, HWO is calling for urgent development of new drugs and government funding for research. Doctors say that without these antibiotics, surgery will become more dangerous and many common diseases can no longer be treated. The most at risk include residents of nursing homes, hospital patients, and children. I'm Monique Wingo, and that's a wrap-up of the latest health news.
Thank you, Monique. Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing childhood cancer. Joining us via phone from Kampala, Uganda, is Dr. Joseph Lubega, pediatric oncology hematology researcher. And also joining us via phone from Los Angeles, California, is Kathleen Rudy, CEO of the St. Baltrick's Foundation. Now, before the break, we touched on the foundation's involvement in helping to address childhood cancer, not only in the United States, but around the world. So, Ms. Rudy, would you please elaborate a little more on what the foundation is doing? As I read on the website, St. Baltrick's Foundation aims to conquer childhood cancers. Tell us how.
Yes, well, thank you. It is certainly a very large mandate. We're very ambitious in that goal.
Absolutely.
Because cancer is such a devastating diagnosis for a family, and certainly, especially for that child, we focus exclusively on pediatric cancers, and we do that exclusively through supporting research. And we always try to be innovative and pioneering in all the research that we support. We don't believe that any one institution, any one hospital, any one doctor, for that matter, has a monopoly on great ideas. We believe genius and brilliance and insights that can lead a field forward can come from anywhere. And so we invite every researcher in the United States that's focused on pediatric cancers or who has ideas that they believe will help children with cancer to apply for funding from us. And we make sure those grants applications are very rigorously reviewed by a team of experts who are very skilled in the area that person proposes to study. And we we support every phase of research, from what we call basic science, which you have a hypothesis and you may not know which direction it's going to lead you, but you have to explore that question to know if it bears promise for children, all the way up to clinical trials and literally everything in between. One of the things when we started the foundation back in 2004 that we learned was that there was going to be a shortage of pediatric oncologists in the United States. And that's an astounding thing to say, because we are a high-income country, and we're used to having very extensive healthcare resources. But the cost of treating children and the competition from other fields of medicine was luring people away into other areas of medicine where funding for research was more stable and prevalent. And so we made a commitment to fund the next generation of researchers and to make sure there would be enough people to continue on that work. Because many of, truly, the entire world right now, because there are so many places where there aren't Dr. Lubegas supported and able to pursue their goals, there is a real dependency on those high-income countries to continue to produce. So we really felt it was important to train the next generation of researchers so that they could continue to provide that thought leadership that would help children in every country of the world. We also do things like we established the International Scholar Program, which is how we first got to know Dr. Lubega, and which allows a physician from a developing country to partner with an institution in a high-income country that they can then get training, they can share resources, they can go back and forth between their home country and that institution and really learn best practices and gain connections and things that might not be available to them at home. But then at the end of that 2-year period, they go back to their country and bring all that knowledge and new skills that they've acquired and are able to put it to work. And this program today, we're talking about one such example where Dr. Lubega is putting that to work. We also do other innovative things like the world's first pediatric cancer dream team, which we co-funded with Stand Up to Cancer, where we're bringing new fields of medicine that had never been put together before together for kids, and we're getting great results from those and many other of our programs. So we're not satisfied with the status quo. We're constantly trying to drive that innovation and to reward those researchers, if you will, with support for their next project when they are getting success and are proving that what they're doing is working.
That's fantastic. Really encouraging there. And Dr. Lubega, you've been working with the Sembeltrick Foundation for several years now. Can you elaborate on your work with the foundation and some of what you've learned and also the type of impact you see that what you were able to benefit from will have in your country?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I must say that even the idea of St. Baldrick starting to support pediatric cancer research in developing countries is such a big, godsend. Because, it's important to understand that until now, pediatric cancer wasn't on the radar of most governments. Uh-huh. It wasn't on the radar of most philanthropy organizations, and not even academic centers in the U.S. Were involved in this kind of work. There's a lot going on in the area of infectious diseases, but no one really thought it was really realized that the suffering and death of children and families that have had childhood cancer. So when St. Baldrick's came up with this international scholarship, it was, to me, probably the best news I've ever had. And I wouldn't be in Uganda right now if it wasn't for this kind of support. And what has enabled me to do is sustain my research career, but in Africa. And as per the goals of St. Baldrick's, one of the goals of this was to use that in the long term to begin building a foundation for high quality research in pediatric cancers in Africa and other developing countries. Because it's important to understand that pediatric cancer is one of those fields where research, care, and education are one and the same thing. They're so tightly connected, and you cannot excel in one without the other.
Absolutely.
So since I've been here, you know, my first goal was over time, working with Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital. We built a training program, the first of its kind in sub-Saharan Africa, to train pediatricians who are interested in taking care of children with cancer and doing research. We attempt to train nurses. We are setting up research infrastructure. And really, I think this is a lot of early success that's coming through this investment by St. Baudrick's Foundation.
So let me ask you this. I know you talked about the fact that people have been focusing on infectious diseases as one of the reasons. But do you think that there is also the fact that perhaps people are not aware of the scope of pediatric cancer in sub-Saharan Africa? That, again, the need for awareness. In medical school, how much of this is being talked about?
I would say very little, and that's partly because if generally you don't have expertise in an area of medicine, it's a well-known thing, you don't even recognize that it happens. One of the things that people are talking about since I've been here is how many cases of children with cancer being seen now. You know, just because, you know, I work with a broader team of pediatricians, and when they have challenging cases, you know, we consult together, and you start picking up these children. Mm-hmm. So yes, you're absolutely right. You know, it's a chicken and egg situation. You know, without someone to focus on an area, you don't, and you know, become less aware that it exists until these cases picked up, and now people are recognizing more and more. Look, you know, many of the children don't have malaria, don't have tuberculosis, mm-hmm. It's leukemia that's making them sick for all this time.
So, Ms. Rudy, I mean, in the United States, very advanced country in terms of healthcare and resources, what do you make of where we are and where we need to go in the future with regards to research and development?
Well, certainly in every country in the world, we need more resources for pediatric cancer than exist now. So I think it's safe to say everybody needs more, because as long as one child is dying of cancer, we haven't fulfilled our mission. We haven't done a good enough job. And so certainly more is important. But I would say also that there is a lot of misunderstanding about the scope of the problem. And also I think in countries like ours, in the U.S., there is a common view, and I encounter this a lot, where people think, oh, well, is it efficient to put money into cancer programs in Africa when maybe they need other things more urgently? And so I think there's a genuine desire to help, but people are looking at scarce resources and how do we save the most people's lives. And so there's a misunderstanding, too, that they don't realize that there are things that can be done for comparatively little money that could save many, many, many lives. And so it's we need to do a better job of telling that story and showing corporations, for example, that have multinational interests, I think, are a very prime opportunity to say, here's an opportunity for you to play a leadership role and help your customers, your employees all over the world by meeting these needs. And you can do it very cost effectively.
Okay. We're running out of time, unfortunately. Mrs. Kathleen Rudy, thank you so much. CEO of the St. Baudrick's Foundation, we appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
And Dr. Joseph Lubega, thank you so much for joining us from Uganda, Kampala. And we wish you the best with your initiative to train more medical personnel in childhood cancer.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me.
And I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Monique Wengo for the news, and our engineer, Robert Wagner. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.